I'm Daniel Vitalis of DanielVitalis.com, and you are listening to the Rewild Yourself podcast, a show dedicated to transcending human domestication, activating our invincible genetic health, and uncovering our true potential. In each episode, we explore the many aspects of the rewilding lifestyle for better health, fitness, and a more rich and fulfilling life. Rewild yourself. Engage your biology. Rewild Yourself is brought to you by SurfThrival.com. Jumpstart your evolution at SurfThrival. Traditional medicines engineered as modern-day life hacks to support immunity, regulate hormones, boost libido, and enhance your peak physical performance. All traits of our wild ancestors. Recover, reformat, rebuild, rewild at SurfThrival.com. Hey, are you ready to develop a lifelong rewilding approach you can feel confident about? Are you tired of struggling to sort through endless diet crazes, fitness fads, and constant scientific revisions? Join me October 11th through the 16th of 2015 in Rhinebeck, New York for my elementary school program. No, not like the elementary school we were put through as children. This is about learning to work with the four elements as a foundation for crafting and perfecting your personalized rewilding lifestyle strategy. You'll learn and anchor in seven practices that are crucial to a well-adapted life in our modern world. We'll be exploring movement and sleep, meditation and diet, water and air, sunlight, as well as a myriad of other ideas, tactics, and techniques for evolving your current way of life. This will be an intimate five-day event at the campus of the Omega Wellness Center where you, myself, and a community of other rewilders will be laying the foundations for lifelong vibrant living. Go to DanielVitalis.com, click on About, and then Coming Events to get more details. Well, what a treat to have Kim and Ami back on the show. I absolutely love interviewing her because it's so rare for me to meet a woman, actually I should say a person, who is so sexually empowered, who can communicate so clearly and explicitly about their sexuality. I feel like this is a really important and often underlooked part of the rewilding kind of package of thinking, because sexuality is a place where we can call up such a tremendous wellspring of internal power, and I assume it's why so often in domestication we see that an animal has its sexuality controlled or even destroyed. So lots of us have dogs and cats in our lives, and few of us have dogs and cats with their genitals intact, right? Out on the farm we see this as a fairly common thing to destroy the genitals of animals. And in human beings who are domesticated, of course we see that sexuality is usually, if not almost always, hyper-controlled, riddled with taboo, restrained, bridled, you know, I could go on and on. It's we often do not feel free to fully express our sexuality, and in fact, we're mostly policed by one another. So if you're one of the people who gets triggered by this interview or interviews like this and wonder, you know, why does he keep going into this terrain? Well, I want to encourage you to really listen through, really tune into yourself and ask yourself why this kind of material can be a trigger for you. And if you're somebody who loves this kind of material, I think this interview is going to feel so good because Kim and I drilled down even deeper than in her last interview here on the show, looking even more closely at our sexuality, at the power of orgasm, at the power of relationship. And one interesting thing about Kim compared to some of the other sex experts I've had on the show is that Kim is not somebody who promotes a kind of polyamorous or open relationship style of relating, but she talks a lot more about monogamy. And I think that's great because so often it's kind of a divisive topic in the rewilding world. So I think this is great to get her perspective as well. And we talk a lot about, and you know, I want to say for myself, I really enjoy this piece too. I sort of like to straddle the fence between these two things. And I like this conversation that we have in this interview really about pair bonding and the power of intimacy between people in a pair bond, and especially the importance of honesty, trust, truth, and how lies can really damage relationships. So I think we go into some really important territory here for those of you who are in relationship, and let's face it, all of us are in relationship at some level with other people. So I think this is some really valuable content in that way. I also like that Kim does not follow the political correctness party line of the current world of sex education. So sometimes she's very bold, well, often, she's very bold and a little brash, saying things that a lot of sex educators shy away from. And I really do understand why sexual educators today have taken the stance that they take, and yet I also appreciate and really love this place Kim comes from, and it's so fun to talk to her about these things. And we're really going to dive into the power of orgasm and the effect that it has on people's psychology, and particularly on women. And I really love this conversation we have about hysteria and the idea of the impact of a deficiency of orgasm for women. So anyway, this is a really fun talk. I do want to say it gets explicit often. Kim is a woman who doesn't shy away also from using language that is what we use in common speech, but we almost always shy away from whenever we do a public kind of talk or presentation. It's funny how we do that, right? Because there's a way that we speak to each other, and then there's a way we speak in public, and they're different. And when people speak in common speech in public, it's often like, oh, taboo. So I like that Kim goes there, and it really encourages me to go there. So I say that because if you have certain words or vibrations of air molecules that you like to keep away from the ears of others, then you may want to listen to this interview in private. Otherwise, expect that it's going to go into what we often call explicit terrain. And again, I just really love the opportunity to do that. So, fantastic show. I think you're really going to enjoy another interview with Kim Inami. Kim Inami is a sex and relationship coach, writer, and speaker. Her musings on love, life, and sex have graced the pages of Playboy, Elle, Glamour, Marie Claire, and national radio and talk shows with an audience up to 7 million. Throughout the year, Kim runs a series of online courses, which she calls Salons, on sex and relationships. Explore her orgasmic enlightenment intimacy retreats and e-courses on all things intimate and sexual at kiminami.com. Kim, awesome to have you back on the show.
It's a pleasure, as always, Daniel.
Yay, I hope it's a pleasure because it seems like you're somebody well-versed in pleasures. I spent the morning reading just amazing articles from your website, and I feel so aligned with the message that you're sharing. And I want to say that I read a lot and listen to a lot of sex educators, and there's just this kind of political correctness that's emerged in that world, which I think is appropriate for a lot of people right now. I think there is a reason for it. And yet, I don't always feel fully aligned with the message. And reading your articles today, I was just reminded, like, wow, I really feel my experiences align where I hear this woman coming from. And I just want to say thank you for that, because I think your voice is really crucial right now to balance out a kind of politically correct, lopsided sex world that's emerged right now.
I appreciate that. And yeah, I'd say a lot of the ideas that I have are politically incorrect in some ways, but I feel that they're actually more empowering in the end, you know. So if we talk about some of that stuff, I can explain how. But, you know, I find that some of that PC-ness is actually patronizing, and it's diminishing the potential of people rather than amplifying it.
I agree. And I also feel, you know, it's something we talked about the last time you were on, it sort of starts to diminish the polarity in a way as well. I feel like it's like a very, we're all the same kind of message, which I think, again, I see the importance of that and the reason for it, but it feels like the fundamental thing that really builds this like beautiful sexual tension and energy between people is this polarity. And I feel like when, you know, sex educators are doing something that diminishes that, it's like in the long game of that maybe isn't the best. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we, you know, there's this idea, like, for example, that I suggest, like, I talk about how I don't use lubrication, false lubrication in sex, and I forbid any of my clients or salon participants to do so either. And the reason behind that is that I believe that lube is a natural, woman's lubrication, her fluids, her flow is a natural, indication that she is emotionally and physically ready for sex. That's it. That's what that's telling you. That's the message. The message isn't, oh, she's dry, slather on a bunch of lube. It's like something needs to be unlocked or opened up for the woman to truly, you know, open in the sexual experience. And if you just override those messages by slathering on artificial band-aids all the time, the woman's going to become disconnected from her vagina. And so the overall prevailing thought, let's say, in sexual educator advice is, oh, use as much lube as possible. Lube is a girl's best friend. I'm saying lube is actually a girl's worst enemy because it's going to dissociate her from her vagina. And every single woman, I have had like 65-year-old women come to me who say, oh, I'm at menopause and I can't lubricate naturally. Shouldn't I be using lube? And I say, absolutely not. What you've actually probably got is a numb, atrophied vagina. We can strengthen that through vaginal kung fu. We'll work on some of your emotional issues and potential blocks. And then lo and behold, I get these women gushing in their 60s who were told that they were just of that age. Don't you worry about it, you pretty little thing. Don't you worry. You're just never going to lube again, but that's okay. There's a big solution for you. It's called artificial lubrication. So I don't buy into that. My view is that those are messages from the body telling us someplace that we need to look to open ourselves up a level further. But that's my approach. I'm working at this holistic mind, body, spirit level where I look at these experiences as messages from the deeper system, from the deeper soul of the person for healing, for growth, right? That's my whole philosophy around sex and relationship work. And not everybody has that, right? So the quick and easy solution is to use some kind of band-aid like that. But like I said, I find that actually patronizing and it's limiting people. You know, I believe that, and I've seen it over and over again, and that's why I can speak so confidently about it, is that all of these things are remediable. You know, there's a remedy for everything. You just have to find it. And my work is about providing a plethora of tools to help people find their own individual remedy.
Yeah, I've noticed something I feel when I'm watching or listening to your work is that there's this deep kind of spiritual component that I feel that I resonate to. And yet it's not done in a, because I often find sort of tantric sexual stuff to be a bit pretentious. I'm like turned off by it. It's like, it's just too much and it takes a lot of the fun out for me. I feel that piece is there for you, but I like that it's sort of behind, there's this really sexy energy that's the forefront. And I really like that because I feel like that piece is really important to me, as is that like tantric connection piece as well. I want both of those things, but I don't like when sex starts to feel pretentious, just like when I don't like sex that feels empty. And so, yeah, I like that you do that. And I want to say that as you were just talking, something that's come up and I talked about on the show recently was, I was talking about, you know, as I do, the domestication of human beings and in particular the domestication of women, because it seems to me that for the last 6,000 years, you know, in some form or another, women's sexuality has not only been repressed and controlled, but women who were standing in the face of the patriarchy were often killed and taken out of the breeding population in such a way that we have ended up with a very kind of submissive woman that we think of as the archetype of what a woman is. And I was saying, hey, maybe we don't actually know really what women actually are like. And I love this idea of the well-fucked woman salon that you have coming up, because I feel like what you're talking about is sort of like, I guess this is what I want to say. What are women actually like sexually versus like, what do we hear all the time? Because I feel like the story we have about women's sexuality is really incorrect. And there's this emerging thing that we're seeing. I grew up believing women just didn't like sex. I mean, that's what I was taught. Like, yeah. Oops, boy, was I wrong.
Right. And I think that's a prevailing myth, is that women and men are taught from the earliest age that women don't like sex. They must be coerced into it. They must be almost tricked into it. And that men really like sex. They want to have lots of sex. And so there's this constant struggle between the two genders. And you know, I believe that that's not true at all. I think that men are also conditioned to believe that they're less emotional and more sexual, that women are more emotional and less sexual. And I believe that women and men are equally as sexual and equally as emotional. But that is the conditioning that we're given that we need to overcome. And I believe in their natural states, women are sexually voracious, right? They're multi-orgasmic. We don't have refractory periods. We are naturally can pop off 5, 10, 15 orgasms in a night easily. And, you know, it's men, you know, when we hear this whole like idea of polygamy, and I'm like, what man can handle 5 women? You know, what, you know, and on the contrary, like any woman can handle 5 men. Right. So it always struck me as a little like, you know, humorous that was being purported as this reality, because, you know, most men are done after one woman. They can't go for 5. Are you kidding? Unless they've trained, you know, or they've really cultivated that. But the most are done. So I really believe that that is women's true state. However, because the cultural conditioning is so rampant, both men and women have to confront that conditioning and work through it, right? Because men are taught that like a really sexually voracious woman is a slut and you marry the good girl, and there's not really this happy medium. And women are really taught the same thing. There's like the Madonna and the whore dichotomy instead of like a natural, you know, libidinous, powerful woman who lies in between the two, or can, you know, go back and forth between the two. So, but it's conscious work that we both have to do, each gender, to get past that and transcend it.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you're saying there. I feel like to satisfy a woman, it requires a man who's kind of a sexual athlete, right? And yeah. Like you said, not only can she orgasm again and again and again, but she can orgasm in so many different ways and from so many different places and with so many different qualities. And I kind of want to talk about that for a minute, because I was reading one of your articles this morning, and you were just talking about the effect of multiple orgasms the effect of orgasm on a woman, and essentially saying, hey, if a woman seems irritable, if a woman seems bitchy, if a woman seems clingy, it's usually because she's not well fucked enough. And I just was like, immediately just resonated with that. I see that in so many relationships around me, and I've experienced that when a woman is extremely sexually satisfied and feels that, and of course, I just want to be clear for the listener, I mean that on every level. I don't mean just physically, genitally, sexually stimulated. I mean emotionally. I mean at that heart level, at that mind level, at that spirit level. She becomes so wonderful to be around that as a man, I feel like it's become obvious to me, if I want to have a really pleasurable life, then my lover needs to be really well sexed, and then my life becomes really fun because she becomes so wonderful to be around. And if she's not getting enough sex, she becomes critical and she becomes irritable and she becomes kind of bitchy, and all those things start to emerge. So can you talk about that a little bit? Because that seems like a taboo thing to say, and it's also seems to be really true.
Right. And I often say that it's not that behind every good man is a woman. It's behind every good woman is a man on his knees, ferociously thrusting and giving her everything he's got. Right. That is the key to your success as a man. Like the most effort, instead of buying her flowers and whatever, the most important thing that you can do is to fuck her well. And then she will give back to you tenfold. But if she's underfucked, she will manifest these symptoms of depression, irritability, rage, road rage, being nagging, you know. And that's what I say. If your woman's naggy and clingy and whining, it's not the natural state of woman. That is the natural state of a woman who's being underfucked. And so it really means all you're telling me, buddy, is that you're not fucking your woman well enough. Like, the onus is on you to be able to fix that state. And you can. And certainly there is an onus on women to do their own sexual work. But we live in a culture where the average sex act takes like what, intercourse is like 3 to 5 minutes on average. That will never fuck a woman well. You know, unless you have a constant sex life that's comprised of many long encounters, medium length encounters, and short, quick encounters, then that's okay. But if the bulk of your sex life is short encounters, a woman will never, never, ever be fully satisfied. And so I often say, like, one orgasm is not enough. And you know, a woman needs several orgasms within an encounter to really be satisfied, and she needs the deeper, more the internal vaginal orgasms. And I talk about how these orgasms are far superior to clitoral orgasms, because once you go inside the vagina, it's a whole other territory. The clitoris was never really meant to be the end game. So when people talk about, you know, did a woman come or not? I'm like, well, which kind of orgasm are you talking about? Because there's so many. And I really tell people, don't even waste your time with the clitoris. It's like, it's a good starting point. It's like an appetizer. But the main course, the truly gourmet food, the life-changing potential of a sexual experience is all in the vagina for a woman. And so I, from a very young age and early sexual experiences, had cervical orgasms. That was my first type of orgasm. And then I learned about the clitoris and then the G-spot. And I really, over the years, I've had, you know, thousands of internal vaginal orgasms and some clitoral orgasms. I just don't bother because they're way more superficial, physical, not so deep. On the contrary, that whole concept of orgasm is the great rebirther, like the little death, la petite mort, that, you know, death and rebirth, that transformative power of orgasm, that all takes place in the vagina. And so I had these experiences where I literally felt like I was a new person, or like the false civilized parts of myself were stripped away, and I emerged as this more authentic, deep, empowered, confident, grounded, beautiful, sensual, radiant version of myself, like my true self. And that would happen through these cataclysmic, lengthy, and multi-orgasmic sexual encounters. So this, to me, is one of the most powerful tools for women, is to be able to, you know, access these states, these emotional, these deeper orgasmic states, with a partner who has the stamina to be able to get her there. So it's twofold. Like, the woman has to be able to be willing to open and surrender and let go to access these states, and she needs a partner who can take that journey with her, a man who can catch her when she falls, who has the stamina to go there and can fuck her multidimensionally, like you said, emotionally, physically, psychologically, spiritually. It's not just where you put your cock in your hands. It's about your emotional support, your psychological meeting of the person, the spiritual direction you have together. And when all of those elements are there, then you've created gourmet sex. You've created the kind of life-changing sexual experiences that I believe are every person's birthright and are available to every person.
Yeah, okay, so wow, there's a lot there. So I want to go into all these different orgasm states in a moment, but I want to first say, I think a lot of men almost view bringing women to orgasm as like work. And I think that they do that because often they're not confident about what actually brings the woman to orgasm. So I want to start there and say, you know, in the primitive skills world, which I love, you know, starting fires is this thing I love doing. We have this saying about starting a fire with one match. And it basically means if you only had one match, you would be so focused on preparing the fire just right so that that you are sure that that one match would get the whole thing to go. And that requires having the right tinder and the right kindling and setting up that fire pyramid just such a way that all it needs is that one spark. And I feel like there's a similarity here with orgasm, because it's like when a man understands, maybe women in general, you know, sexual anatomy in general, but also the woman he's with in particular, what brings her to orgasm, it's not like work anymore. It's really fun and extremely nourishing. So for me, I don't know there's anything quite so emotionally, spiritually, psychically nourishing for me as when a woman orgasms. In my presence, it's like it's such an amazing feeling. But I feel really confident about that because I've trained in it, because I've educated myself. So what do you say to men who are like, wow, I can't seem to get this, who don't understand what makes a woman come or why she's coming, or sometimes she comes and he doesn't realize what made it happen, and it feels like hit or miss and just random to him, but it's not random. And yeah, what do you say to these guys?
Well, I'd say that it's a whole in and out of bed experience, and you know that. And this is, you know, that what happens in, but like orgasm is the final culmination. Mm-hmm. It's the barometer of the state of your connection. And so if, for example, you are really connected and close and you talk and you're open and you have emotional honesty and disclosure and communication, I say it clearing the glass, like, you know, clearing the blocks out of your space together, then orgasm will come pretty easily and be fairly deep. And if you have unresolved shit, if you say had an argument at breakfast and then you go to have sex that night and you haven't fully resolved it, probably orgasm won't happen, or the sex will be very lackluster. And so all of the stuff that happens outside the bedroom also has a huge impact on what happens in bed. And orgasm is the barometer. And this is where I feel like sort of mainstream culture is a bit lost, where they're like, oh, don't worry, little girl, you can't have some women just can't have vaginal orgasms, and some women can. You're just one of the poor ones who can't. Like, I think that's such bullshit. Every single woman can get there, but they're looking at it wrong. They're looking at it as a series of movements or anatomy, you know. Yeah, right. And to me, I always say 10% of what gets, you know, the sexual everything is technique. Everything else is what I'm just saying, what happens outside of the bedroom. 10% is mechanics of good sex. 90% is everything else, like your emotional connection, your spiritual, psychological connection, everything, the trust that you have within the relationship. So orgasm is more a barometer of that than a series of hand, you know, motions that get to an end. And so you know, that's, but that's your power. Like that's, so in terms of the man who might think that's a lot of work, I mean, that this is where I guess you have to wrap your head or do that reframe, that if you have your, if you understand that your relationship is your power source, this is either going to give you more power than you could ever imagine as a man. Mm-hmm. Like I said, your woman is your secret weapon, or vice versa, your man is your secret weapon, but only if you're putting in the time to cultivate that relationship. It's like when people buy a plant, right? You go to the store, you buy a plant, you bring it home, you put it in the corner, and you make sure it has light, and you water it once a week, you make sure it's like well positioned, that it's happy, you look after it. Or you know, you go to the store, you buy a plant, you put it in the corner, and you ignore it for the next 3 weeks or, you know, 2 months, it's going to die. And most people approach their relationships that way. They just assume that they're going to run on autopilot and that they don't need constant nurturing. And so all of that work is what combines to make a woman come. You know, not just like you put your two fingers in this come hither motion yeah. at the G spot. Right, right. And then Western science, but they fully, like, they're like, oh, well, if a woman can't do that and this woman can, according to the scientific method, then this orgasm is a myth. Like, I just laugh, like, every time they come out with some other study that, you know, which basically is saying that the guy who engineered the study has the most underfucked wife in the world. That's all the study really tells me. You know, it is symptomatic of Fukme and these people. Then, you know, because it's so, there's so many other factors that people aren't getting.
Yeah, you know, and that brings me to another piece that I've noticed with a lot of guys. It's like, I try to tell men, look, even if your woman doesn't specifically know you're lying to her, she's going to feel, women are like truth meters, right? They're like, they sense so deeply when something's off. And I, you know, I see so often, I was recently hanging out with a bunch of guys for a project I was working on, guys I didn't know that well, and they spent the whole, we were together a week, these guys were on Tinder all week, looking for new sex partners, right? And they all had girlfriends, and I was like, oh. I was like, do you tell your woman that you do this? You know, because they hook up with these girls. Do you tell your partner that you do this? Oh, no, no way. It's like, you think she doesn't, okay, she might not specifically know that it was like this girl on this day, but she knows, man. Her body knows, and her body's going to respond to this. Totally. And why? What's the point of being with this woman if she can't emit that ecstatic energy that nourishes you both because she feels there's some block between you guys, even if she can't name it specifically? So I feel like men often, because men are so often so intellectual, it's almost like they think, well, she doesn't know specifically. It's like they don't realize like the feeling sense, the polygraph of a woman's heart or something, you know?
Well, I call it the lie of a lie, is that you think that you can get away with a lie, right? But as though it's not felt in the space somehow. And you're absolutely right. Like everything is felt. So and this can happen the opposite direction too. It could be the woman who's got other partners and she's, but anything that you omit, that you lie about, that's withheld in the terrain of the relationship, it shows up. It might be invisible. It might not be fully traceable, but it will create some kind of blockage. And again, those are the kind, like again, your orgasm is your barometer. Your libido is your barometer. And so when people say they have issues with their orgasm or issues with their libido, like their sex drive, it's just a symptom. It's just an indication that there is a block someplace. And that's why I don't say, go take some Viagra or go take, you know, some pill. Like go, because that's not the solution. There is a solution, but it requires radical honesty. Like these people that you're describing clearly aren't interested, or they just don't know how. They don't know how, and they just think it's normal to be in a relationship where you lie to your partner on a regular basis, right? Instead of having a relationship that values radical honesty and transparency and authenticity at any cost. And that's what I promote, is that the foundation of the kind of relationship that changes your life must have those qualities in it. And so there's, you know, most people subsist in relationships that are full of dishonesty, sins of omission, not really showing up, and outright lies. That's what most people have, and that's why most people's relationships are shit and why they say monogamy is shit. Those guys claim they're in a monogamous relationship, but clearly they're not, right? So that's what most people's definition of monogamy is a bunch of fucking lying. Right? To truly have a monogamous relationship where you have clarity, honesty, transparency all the way around is a very rare thing. And whether it's monogamous or not, to have those qualities, like that's where you cultivate the power of life-changing sex. And those things have to be there to get to the kind of places that I'm promoting and talk about, that I want all people to have their relationship as their power source. And the only way you get there is through that kind of openness and transparency.
Yeah, and I think also one of the things that are missing for kind of like, you know, people like I was just describing is what they think of as good sex is really, really like low level sex, at least from my perspective. So they're experiencing like a good workout and thinking, oh, that's what great sex is. Or they're basing it off of what they see, you know, in sort of standard pornography, like, okay, that's great sex because there's a lot of moving and a lot of different positions and a lot of noise and all of that. And it's like, if you haven't experienced these higher ecstatic states, then it's hard to, if you don't have a reference point for it. So you don't realize that maybe the sex that you're having with your partner or your other partners or whatever it is, isn't really that good. And another thing I think men often don't realize is how my experience is women in particular are super, super, super sexually open to lots of exploration if you create the right space, you hold the right space, you bring the right energy, you bring the heart connection when there's truth between you and all that stuff's aligned. My experience is most women want to go just about anywhere you can dream of. And it's not about what she's into or not into, it's about who you are and how you stand before her. And I think if men knew that, they would be having a lot more fun and exploring a lot more of the things that they kind of are, that are their fantasies with their partner, really loving it versus all the resistance they're getting because they're coming with kind of the wrong energy.
I fully agree. You articulated that very well. And you know, when the woman has a partner who is supportive and creates that, I would say, encasing type, embracing type energy, like I said, if she falls, you will catch her, that she won't be judged if she's this super sexual woman, right? Because in the back of her mind, she's had that imprinted on her, that Madonna whore dichotomy, right? That if she's really sexual, she'll be judged. And so if the man creates the right space and approaches her with that authenticity, absolutely, that's what's going to open her into these deeper states. And I think you're right. Like, again, this is my great leveler, is that these states are available to every single woman, every single man. It's just finding the right keys to get there.
Yeah, you know, I had put a call out to my social networks yesterday saying, hey, you know, any specific kind of questions for Kim? I'm going to talk with her tomorrow. And one of the things that came up a couple times was people saying, hey, you know, she's saying that sex is all we need to fix relationships or to keep relationships healthy. Is that all it is? Because it seems like there's so much more. And as I was reading that, I was thinking, oh, I understand where that question's coming from, but I also think that it's a little bit of a paradigm twist there, because like you were saying before, it's not that you just start having sex and all that stuff goes away. It's that the really good sex seems to emerge out of all that clarity, all of that trust, all of that truth, all of that love, all of that heart connection, all those things. But I'm wondering if you can speak to that as well, just sort of, you know, when people are experiencing relationship troubles, I guess that's the question people are asking. Is it just a lack of sex, or, you know, how do you explain that to people when they ask about that?
Well, I think we've kind of touched on that in the sense of what you said, like that it's not just sex as most people might think of it. Like if you just start fucking like bunny rabbits, everything will magically go away. It's that the sex is born out of this other work. Like I talk about gourmet sex versus junk food sex, right? Like junk food sex as this, you know, quick hit. It might be kind of appealing in the moment. There's this rush of energy, a peak, and then this fall, like this blood sugar plummet, you know, and a sense of regret where you just pass out afterward. And then there's gourmet sex, which is this meal that's taken probably some time to even think about how to prepare it. And then there's all the preparation that goes into it, the highest quality ingredients, lots of love and focus goes into the preparation of this food. And then, you know, many different flavors, many different dimensions and tastes. So you eat something and it's like this, you know, when they make those wine descriptions, there's a hint of lemon and then an undernote of pear and basil and then a high note of, you know, it's like that. And then that you think about that meal, you feel really nourished, you think about it for days afterward, what a beautiful experience it was. And the the nutritional elements of the meal are so powerful that it actually builds something in your body rather than depletes it. So that's the same thing as, you know, junk food sex and gourmet sex. And everything that surrounds the sex act is just as important as the sex act itself, that it's this culmination of all the work that you're doing all of the time to bring you to that place.
I so agree with that, because it seems to me in a good connection, a good relationship, like sex is this ongoing thing. It's not just in the bedroom. It's not just when the so-called sex acts or what we consider the sex acts are happening, but it's happening when you're talking to other people. It's happening when you're texting with each other. It's happening when you're shopping. It's happening when all these different places where that energy, that sort of push-pull energy between the two people can be an ongoing event. Like it never has to end. And therefore it's like a constant kind of, it's a constant sexuality that's taking place between both people. Is that, you agree with that?
Absolutely. I refer to it as the term, as the ongoing sexual simmer. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, you like exactly that. Your sex life isn't just relegated to the bedroom at night at this time and then it's done. It's that there's always this ongoing hum and electricity that's buzzing between you, and that's felt in everything that you do, even your interactions with other people. You're still humming with this energy. And that, because sexual energy is life force energy, it's creative energy, and that it's not just about hitting this orgasmic peak and then a decline, like the way I would describe junk food sex. That with gourmet sex, that's feeding you all the time. You're aware of it all the time. You're fucking your lover all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and each orgasm I find in with that kind of a connection happening seems to go, it doesn't hit that peak and then drop, but it hits that peak and then it plateaus, and then you can hit a higher peak and you can keep,
totally.
You can ride it to the point where it's like, wow, I got to get up in the morning. Like when am I, I got to stop at some point, because like I could do this forever. It just feels like you tap into this energy that's like such an eternal wellspring of fuel that it's like, it feels like a never ending thing. And it feels like you were saying before, with a woman's body, it's like amazing. She can just go and go and go and come and come and come and come and come and from so many different places. I mean, this really is profound for me. Talk about these different types of orgasms and where they, what we know, what you know about them, where they come from. Because I think, like you said, the clitoral orgasm to me seems like, it's almost like you're letting the pressure off or something. It's like a
right.
pressure cooker and you
right.
a little pressure release, but not a deeply satisfying experience. In fact, I kind of noticed that, I'm sure you've seen this, it's like the clitoral orgasm tends to give this vocal tone of like, it's like really high pitched. and then you start getting into these vaginal orgasms and they start to go like lower, and then you get into
like,
and then you get into the like cervix or that anal stuff, and then all of a sudden you're getting this like, it's like really low pitch, and it keeps dropping down into these deeper places, I notice. So I'm kind of curious about that, and you know, what you think about all that.
Well, you know, the Taoists mapped out reflexology zones on the genitalia. And so the clitoris is meant to be the reflexology area for the, like, just to get your neurotransmitters, like the pineal pituitary gland, like to just kind of start things flowing in the system. And then once, like literally, you know, once the deeper you go, the deeper you go. So as you enter the vagina, just the act of opening and being penetrated is also saying, so the clitoris was like the appetizer, like give them a clitoral orgasm, let them ejaculate a little bit from that. That'll like lube up the vagina, and then, hey, you can enter her, right? It's like, this is just a little bit of a warm up, where most people stop there. They think that's the end game. And I say, no wonder women aren't that interested in sex. If that's all they've ever experienced, I would probably be like, I can take it or leave it too. You know, like that's not that interesting to me. And then the internal orgasms are more emotional. Like the clitoral is more physical. You know, anyone can pretty much pop up a clitoral orgasm with the right physical stimulation. Your heart doesn't have to be in it. There doesn't need to be any emotional connection at all. The internal orgasms require more of each person. You know, the woman has to be willing to open emotionally. She has to be willing to truly let someone in. And that's the thing. You can't fake it. You could let a penis inside your vagina, but it doesn't mean you'll bring yourself to vaginal orgasm if you're not fully feeling it. That's where the illusion of lube comes in. You could throw the lube on, insert, and then do your thing. But it doesn't mean that anyone's really going to get anywhere, especially the woman. And so there's the G-spot, you know, that we think is sort of like the mid-range, and then the cervix is like the queen, the empress of all female orgasms. So the G-spot is more emotional. You definitely need, the woman has to be able to feel like she can let go. If she will fall, he will catch her. I repeat that over and over again because it's such a key fundamental dynamic between the sexes, right? Between the feminine and the masculine archetype. If she lets go, he will catch her. So if she feels that, if she's willing to open and let go, if she's got at least a modicum of comfort with her own sexuality, her own body, her vagina, and her partner, she can probably get to these orgasms. And then as you go further into the vagina, there's the AFE zone, but in particular the cervix. And so the cervix is the heart point in the Taoist reflexology system. And there's an energetic channel that goes right up from the cervix all the way to the crown chakra. And so this is like the, and it's connected to the vagus nerve, which is considered to be the most deepest spiritual nerve in the body. And so you have this cosmic portal that's basically happening and this heart place with the cervix. And so personally, I need to be in love with someone to have a cervical orgasm. Like I have to really have that depth of connection there. The heart is really that opening to that orgasm. And so that was the first orgasm I ever had. And it was like this, you know, if you've ever taken ecstasy, that's what it feels like. It's like this deep waves of pleasure, opening, feeling at one with yourself, at one with the universe, compassion, love, physical bliss that's just radiating throughout your entire body. And that lasts for days afterward. This is also what, we're talking about sex just not being relegated to a 5-minute act, but it spreads out throughout the clitoral and really basic penile orgasms can certainly be a 5-minute act. But these deeper orgasms, which I suggest is where it's really at, are life-changing, life-expanding, and giving. And so that kind of release for the woman, that opening, that letting go, that surrender, and the process to get her there is what really sustains her as a woman and enables her to tap into her true feminine power, support her man in a really deep way, and to be out in the world as this feminine strength and power source.
Amen, sister. Okay, there's a bunch of stuff there. I want to pull that apart a little bit. First, I think, you know, and something that maybe doesn't get said enough here, I'm not saying that you don't, because I think that you definitely do, but I think that a lot of people don't really approach their sex life as a practice. They might approach their workouts or their yoga as a practice, or their martial arts as a practice, or their meditation as a practice. And then sex, because there's still like shame, guilt, whatever stories are left there, blockages for people, it's almost this thing that sort of people fall into often. And I think when it's really approached as a practice, then it's like it can keep improving and keep improving, like any practice. It keeps getting better and better. And then I want to say that in the same way that I think, you know, I guess with the so-called G-spot kind of area, it's like, if a woman is she's engorged, this is a really pleasurable area. But if she's not, and she's not really turned on, it's not usually a very good feeling to have that poked at. And then I find the same thing with the cervix. So I think a lot of women are probably hearing this and going, hey, when he bumps my cervix, right, when my cervix is touched, it's uncomfortable. And then, like you said, when that extreme state of openness is reached, when there's that love there, when she's fully confident about her lover and her own body, when she's not worried about all the things, is somebody going to walk in? Am I going to be a slut? Am I going to get pregnant? Am I going to get an STI? Like all those things are on a woman's mind often, but those are all not there. And she can totally relax into that space. And like you said, no, he's going to catch her if she falls. Then all of a sudden, wow, this area transforms, right? And sensations are really different. So talk to us about that, because I think a lot of women do think, oh, that's a painful spot.
And that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, is that, and this is where the time factor becomes so much, you know, at play, is that people have probably tried a little bit, like, oh, they try to stimulate the G-spot and there's discomfort there, or the cervix, and so they just give up and they buy into that idea, oh, I guess I'm just one of those women who can't get there. So I had a couple who was they were on my Bali retreat a few months ago, and one of her big goals was like to get to G-spot orgasm. She'd never had one. She's about mid-30s. They'd been together for a few years, and you know, they were quite happy together. And she said, you know, like, I just assumed I was one of those women and I've only ever had clitoral orgasms. So, of course, I corrected her and gave them, you know, like a lot of education about the idea. And then, you know, sent them. So I in my retreats, they're a week long and it's residential. And I send people always with home play to do that's like emotional discussion type home play and physical, like try these different techniques. So they went and did their, you know, block clearing discussion homework. And it turned out that there was quite a bit. So they spent that evening, like probably like 5 or 6 hours talking. It's like they were up until midnight or one. And they finally were just like, we can't do our physical homework tonight. Let's just call it a night. We'll go to bed and we'll wake up in the morning and we'll do it. So they wake up in the morning after having this, you know, really big cleansing conversation for several hours where they just stuck with it until they got, you know, as far as they could go. They wake up in the morning. They give it a shot. She has her first G-spot orgasm. She ends up squirting and soaking the sheets. And for the rest of the week, she's like gushing and squirting. They had to get their sheets changed like several times a day, right? And she's like, every day she'd come in to the class or to, you know, meals and talk about some new crazy experience they had, right? So she literally overnight went from being someone who couldn't get there who could. And part of that is simply being having permission, like, hey, I guarantee that you can get there. I guarantee it. And then doing the work, they did the groundwork, they did the supporting work to get there. So then, you know, and time, right? Like having time, having several hours to play, massage, open. And I've, you know, the G-spot and the vagina itself holds and packs so much tension. It's like the holder of all the oppressed, internalized stuff that women keep in terms of being in a woman's body, their sexual experiences, their emotional stuff gets stored in the vagina. And so that's why the jade egg, the vaginal kung fu practice is really powerful, because we're looking at how to de-armor the vagina. And you can do that as a partner, you know, by soft, slow massaging touch and attention. And with time, you'll notice that if you say go into the G-spot and initially it's sore or uncomfortable, if you just gently massage and stimulate the area without the thought of having to get your partner to orgasm, eventually that tissue will change and she will open up and she'll start to feel more pleasurable sensations there. You know, as a physical approach, right? The other stuff is the supporting, trust building and emotional work that a couple does together. But from a physical perspective, you can literally go in and you start slow, and you can do this at the cervix. The entire vagina is just doing like slow palpating touch and massage, just like you're working on a muscle that's tight and knotted that you just slowly focus on it to open it up, to stimulate it into opening to you. And that's the same thing with the vagina on a whole metaphorical level as well.
Yeah, and I feel like with the cervix too, it's for a man, it's like we're so solar in a way. It's like the sun goes through, of course, our annual cycle, but it happens slow. And every day the sun seems just about like it was the day before. But the moon, which is like the lunar aspect, which is so much more feminine, it's like it's changing so quickly that it's like you look up in the sky, you're like, oh, it's a full moon. You look at the next day, you're like, oh, it's a half moon. And the cervix is like this because, you know, where a woman's cervix is, of course, at her moon time versus where it is when she's ovulating is really different. And as a man, I think when you start to dial that in and realize that, you can start to follow it, like, okay, here it's this time of the month, it's she's ovulating, it's moving up and in, and it's softer and it's open and it's secreting, and okay, now she's bleeding and it's down here and it's like stiffer and it's different, and learning to appreciate her rhythm and flow and learning to like appreciate the quality of her different sexual expression during that cycle, I think, is also really overlooked. And I think a lot of men just don't even know what's inside there. So I always tell guys, like, get a speculum with your partner, like, look inside there. Cause it's like, for me, it was just so life changing to go, oh, okay, that's what I'm working with. I had no idea. I was just reaching into the darkness. I didn't know what was in there. And that was really powerful for me as well, because here we are talking about a cervix, but I think a lot of people have only ever seen those like anatomy drawings of them and don't really even know what a cervix is.
Right. And a lot of people don't even know that they can have a cervical orgasm, you know? So it is like, I think you touched on this earlier, this idea of ongoing sexual education and study. And, you know, that's a big part of what I do, are these sexual salons where people can continually learn and expand and what's even possible, like what's out there. Because most people just don't know. They've settled probably for a certain level of good sex or not good sex, or, you know, I believe that even like if you have a 9 out of 10, you can have a 20 out of 10. You know, like how can you up level your sex life? Like people will often ask me, like, how you know, oh, so you just, you have, like, you work with people with problems. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes, but I'm also like trying to tell people that every man can separate orgasm from ejaculation. Every woman can shoot ping pong balls with her vagina. Like, I'm working at this up leveling, you know? Like,
yeah, right, like, right.
What's truly possible for every couple and every person on the planet. So, I mean, you know, to me, the vagina is like this Pandora's box of experiences, feelings, sensations, emotions. Like, even with that reflexology zone, there's all these different emotional areas in the vagina. And so they're different sensations and qualities. And so the best thing that you can do is to get to know them all. And to be like, I'll tell you, like, I never read a book that said, hey, this is how you have a cervical orgasm or a G-spot orgasm. Everything that I learned about my vagina came through self and partner exploration. Like, I had my first cervical orgasm before I even knew what it was. I had a clitoral orgasm before I even knew what it was. And same thing with a G-spot orgasm. It wasn't until years later that I read about these different demarcations of orgasms. The only thing I heard about at a young age was that Sigmund Freud had said that the internal vaginal orgasms for women were the more mature orgasms. And he was getting lambasted by feminists who were like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, actually, he's right. Because, like, I from my own experience. And then I just started to piece together over the years that there were these delineated areas in the vagina with, I knew there were different orgasms. So what I'm trying to say by that is you don't need to go read a book necessarily. It's good to educate yourself and get inspired and get some idea of the terrain you're dealing with. But you can also just start, you know, you can also just go in there with the idea of learning and exploring and be patient and know that if you've done that kind of groundwork around opening and connecting and building trust, the proof is in the pudding. You'll watch the woman unfold and open right before your eyes.
Mm. And it leads, you know, it's funny because you were just saying about separating the orgasm and the ejaculation, shooting ping pong balls, you know, all these kind of things. And I want to add to that, there's also these states that you release so much endogenous drugs that, you know, oxytocin, DMT, all these things, to where you can reach truly psychedelic states with your partner where literally I've been hallucinating and my heart is so open I can't contain the love that I feel, and that I feel like I've taken MDMA and LSD at the same time, and I'm dissolving all my interpersonal boundaries. I mean, I think if people, like, again, my Tinder friends, they don't know that exists. You know, they have no idea that exists. And so, you know, I think that's a piece of it too. And then another thing we joked about together before we started recording was the kind of the old thinking around hysteria. And I wanted to chat about that for a second as well, because, you know, your course coming up is The Well-Fucked Woman. And I've been thinking about this a lot, just the fact that if a woman is underfucked, she starts to kind of, we talked about it earlier, kind of have like a meltdown a little bit, right? It starts slow and it builds, and she starts to almost get lost inside herself emotionally, it seems like. And then there used to be a medical kind of term for this, and it was like understood, and that's really fallen out of vogue, and it's super taboo. And for, you know, if you've never seen, if you're listening to this and you've never seen the movie Hysteria, by the way, I think it's really fun and worth watching. So I want to chat about that a little, just sort of this idea that this isn't just we're not just kind of joking around, oh, she needs, like, you know, oh, that woman would be way happier if she had sex. You described before this woman who had her, you know, who started gushing on your retreat. And I'm guessing when she walked into the room, it wasn't just she was happy. I bet everybody turned and saw her and was like, what happened to her? Because a woman who's well-fucked radiates so much energy that people have to often come up to her and comment on it. Even people who don't know her often are going to come up and say, what are you doing? What's your secret? All these things. You know, it seems like we have this dichotomy between, you know, this is a medical thing we're talking about, right? It's not just this sort of made up idea. It's like, right. she can be losing her shit, or she can be having people stop her on the street to ask her what her secret is.
Absolutely. And so a few years ago, I was writing this article for Playboy about, because I have this term, I use the well-fucked woman, and I was writing about that. And I was on the phone with this woman who wanted to come and see me for some coaching. And the reason she came is because she was trying to have a baby with her partner, and they weren't doing so well. They had some, you know, conception issues. And then she shared that, you know, previous to deciding to have a baby, they hadn't had sex in about a year. And then they just decided that they were going to try to start, I guess, forcing themselves to have sex, and suddenly, and for some bizarre reason, couldn't manifest a baby. Like, you know, again, these are all barometers, right? Your issues are all barometers. So clearly, for me anyway, it's like, you know, there's issues there that are preventing conception until they can work out their shit. And so, and on the phone with her, she was so erratic. Like, she was like, one minute she was crying, another minute she was laughing, then she was shrieking, and then she was like really sad again. And I was like, oh my God, this woman's hysterical. And then I went, wait a second, hysteria actually means under fucked, right? And then I went back and did some research about it, because I was right in the middle of writing this article. And she was, you know, truly one of the most hysterical under fucked women I've ever met. And because, you know, of what was going on. And so, you know, hyster, you know, is the root word Latin for womb. And hysteria means an uneasy womb, or a wandering womb that's wandering around the body causing havoc because it's not being well fucked. And so even in the time of Galen and Hippocrates, they had this listed in the medical literature as this condition of women who were not having enough sex. And so they would have these symptoms of depression, irritability, rage, frustration, what did they call it? Crazy behavior even. And I started to see this more and more. And I have this really funny story. At the time, I had my office in this building, and I had a gym I would go to a lot. And there was this German guy who lived in the building, and he would come into the gym, and he would come up to me. We had developed a friendship over the years in the gym, and he was about in his mid-40s, German guy, and he would say, "Ah, Kim, you're really getting some, hey? You look really good." And it would be like, true, I'd be in a great relationship, having lots of sex, or he'd come and see me and be like, "Ah, Kim, I'm so sorry, hey? It's been a while, hey?" And I was like, how does he know this? And he could read it. And it, you know, showed me that there was this tangible quality that people, especially women, would radiate. And just the other day, I went to see my hairdresser, and I said, "Oh, you're really well fucked, aren't you?" I said, "You're looking especially well fucked." And she laughed, and she's like, "How can you tell?" And I'm like, "I can tell, because she's juicy, she's radiant, she's just like glowing with this energy." And so, you know, over the years, I've really, this well fucked woman meme has taken on a lot of truth, where there's these qualities of women who are in that place. And I've even found that it translates into a physicality, like that their body changes, is that when you're being so cherished, adored, cared for, seen, acknowledged, that your body finds its true form. And I was working with this woman, and she had tried everything. Like, she had been on the best nutritional programs and great holistic nutrition advice, working with a trainer all the time, and still couldn't get past this extra 10 or 15 pounds that she'd been carrying. And one day she bounces into my room, my office. She like whips up her shirt, shows me this like gorgeous lace bra that she's got on, and like points at her belly. And she's like, "Oh my God, like I'm just, the weight is literally dropping off me. I'm not doing anything different." And she just entered into this really sexy new relationship where she felt very seen, very acknowledged, very sexually met, and literally the weight was falling off of her. And I've seen, like, my weight's been fairly stable, I'd say, over the last number of years, but there was a number of years ago, I was off on this 6-day sex date with my lover. So I talk about people creating sex dates to have lots of time for sexual exploration. And we'd gone away for 6 days to just have nothing but lots of amazing sex. And I came out of that, and I came back, and my body had taken on this like crazy sculpted, even more svelte. Like, I work out, I take care of myself, so I'm fairly fit, but something just bizarrely different happened to my body, where it just came into this even more, I don't know, fit and beautiful realization of itself. And again, I didn't do anything physically different except have a lot of fucking amazing sex. And so I call it the cum diet body, or the well-fucked physique, you know, how it actually manifests in your physicality as well as the energy that you radiate out to the world. And I hear what you've described all the time, where people who do my work will come back and say, like, you know, people are coming up to me and saying, like, "Are you doing something different? Like, what are you doing? Because you just look and feel so radiant or so healthy," or, you know, whatever. And then some people will share with them and some people won't.
Yeah, it seems like the same thing as a man. When I'm having really good sex, what I notice is that women are more attracted to me. So and that's whether I'm present with my partner or she's not with me present. Like I could walk into my bank and if I'm having really good sex, the women in there are all wanting to talk to me. And you know, I could be at a party with my partner and if we're having really great sex, I notice that like single people tend to like gravitate over and want to like hang with us, you know? Like they're all starting to like want to get into our energy. And it seems like, yeah, this energy on people attracts not just, I want to say, you know, and I don't want to get too like kind of woo about it, but like not just physically either, right? I feel like it's attracting all kinds of things. Like that sex magic is powerful. And so when you're building that, wow, your business is better, your opportunities are better, the cop lets you off without a speeding ticket. Like all that stuff starts happening for through the sex magic, right?
Totally. I'm so glad you said that because I see that all the time and I talk about that all the time in my work. And it might seem, you know, like it's not logical, but it is. It's magic. It's like literally sex magic. And I talk about how people, when they are radiating in that place, everything else in their life goes better. And true, you make more cash. Like people talk to me about that too, or people just start throwing money at them, you know, where they previously were living in kind of a feast or famine or mostly famine type existence. And then boom, they reconcile or, you know, regenerate their sex life and energetically just start to draw in all of these things. It's magnetic. You start to magnetize that. And it's just so attractive, right? It's so attractive on so many levels that people are just drawn to it. And I've noticed the exact same thing. I talk about that with my partner too, is that like people just glom onto us, you know, like it's like you're radiating that energy and people just feel it. And then they are like circling you pretty much when you go out places. You have to like cut your way through this crowd.
Yeah. And it's such a fun way to walk through the world. I mean, I just love it. And it becomes really obvious too. Like you were joking before, you really see the people who are undersexed. It's like you see that like gremlinish, grumpy thing that comes out of people when they're not getting the action that they really need. So, okay, so talk to us about your upcoming salon, because I really want the women here who are listening to know about this and know about this opportunity, because I feel like most people I know have not really ever made the commitment to the practice. And it seems to me that this course is about really putting people on that path. So correct me if I'm wrong, and then tell us what the course is about, how people can get involved.
Right. So, how to be a well-fucked woman is kind of like the user's guide, like the guide to how to be in a female body and exist with your sexuality, the things that you've probably never been taught, you know, the sex school that people never had. And so, it's an 8-week program. It's comprised of HD videos. Every week we have a different theme and module that we cover. And then there's home play assignments that you do that are both like, you know, emotional journaling type or discussion type questions, as well as physical home play. And then every week there's a follow-up live Q&A call with me where you can ask me anything, whether it's long-standing sexual questions or troubleshooting your home play, anything of the sort. And then there's this whole supportive community element of interaction that goes on at the same time. So the things that we cover in the course are some of the stuff we've already talked about, like how to really come out sexually, like how to claim and reverse some of that those cultural blocks that we've had and, you know, fully step into your sexuality. I recommend a lot of different healing protocols and treatments that people like are complements to the work that we do that are quite renegade and powerful that just aren't in the mainstream. And then I talk about different the whole orgasmic process. So how to really get to these deeper orgasms. What's the physical work that has to be done? What's the emotional work that has to be done? I talk about sex and cash, how like the libido really is this expression of your life's work that you individuate through your sexual energy. You give your gifts out to the world. If you're truly expressing your internal gifts, cash will come back to you. That's the universe's way of saying, hey, you've stepped up to the plate. You're really showing up in the world. Here's some cash, you know, have fun. So I look at money and the process of money. And, you know, your individual gifts is like your sexual blueprint, your individual personality, the gifts that you are meant to give in this world. We talk about polarity, like really have learning how to let go, surrender, open, embrace that feminine energy and how to get power from it. You know, where we think that in our world the masculine is more powerful than the feminine or gets shit done, how to really get things done from the feminine way. You know, how to attract and radiate. Just like we talked about, this sex magic idea is really like a feminine archetype, right, of radiating and magnetizing things into your world. So we talk about that a lot, and how to increase polarity, like even how to incorporate some light BDSM concepts into and play into your relationship to increase that polarity and that, you know, amplify the masculine feminine dynamics.
Okay, so you just mentioned deep throating and anal sex, and I think those are acts that sometimes people think of as being like really pornographic or really taboo, but there's a deeper thing going on here, and I just get really excited by the idea of you helping to train people in this. Could you say a little bit about why? Because I think there's like a misconception about what these acts are really about.
Right. So, you know, a large part of what I do is educating people about why to do certain things. And I found out that early in my work as a sex coach and relationship coach, it wasn't that people didn't know how, because you could read any random Cosmo article that tells you like how to give a blowjob and the best blowjob ever. But people just weren't doing it because they didn't want to. Right. And so that was where I needed to start. And so what I try to do is educate people about why deep throating will make you a better person and why anal sex will bring you closer to God. And then I can throw in a few pointers about how to do it. But really, like, I see these sex acts as very powerful, heavy hitting things that open both people. And so the process for a woman to really open her throat, open her ass, very sensitive, very delicate, very vulnerable areas, is a very truthful process. You can't lie, you can't fake it, or it will hurt, right? There is no bullshitting. You can't throw lube there and just like kind of make it happen, right? Like, you have to actually open as the woman. So the woman gives the man this gift of acknowledging that she trusts him, you know, this trust, like she opens. She says, I trust that you will go into these very sacred, very intimate places and you will honor me and be respectful. And then, you know, he feels that gives him so, it feeds him so immensely. And then she experiences these powerful waves and reverberations of the opening that it takes for her to get there, like incrementally, millimeter by millimeter, opening, letting him into her, receiving him, truly embracing him. And that's extremely dimensionally transformative for the woman as well. So these are acts that I believe everyone ought to have in their sexual repertoire and be adept at. And so my, you know, the first off is to make the case why they're so valuable, you know, to have these things that truly are deep sex acts. And then you can decide as lovers, when you have a certain mood or a certain kind of energy, which of these acts you want to pull out of your repertoire, right? To heal, to connect, to further deepen something, to open something, to crack something open. Like for me, anal sex is one of those things where I might feel really stuck or frustrated or something. And it's like, okay, let's get in, let's bring out the big guns. Let's have some anal sex because I need to crack myself open, or I need you to help crack me open. Right. And that's how I want people to look at these sex acts, not at some random box checking porn acts that everyone should do, but these are spiritually opening and transformative. And so, you know, like these are tools that everyone ought to have. And so while I mostly educate, a lot of education about why, then I'll throw in, you know, because for deep throating and anal sex, there are some really specific physical things that you can be helped with. For example, there's a point that you can use to actually stop the gag reflex with deep throating that most people don't know about, right? And so there's a few like really specific physical things that I give that will absolutely make those acts more pleasurable. But, you know, I also want people to know why. If they don't know why and they're not inspired by why, they'll never even bother. So how is irrelevant?
Okay, ladies, yes, please learn this. Guys, be the kind of guy she can really release into, like, that she can really trust to share these things with you. All right, it's on both of you. Okay, so Kim, we're kind of at the end of our time here. I know your Well Fucked Woman salon starts August 13th, and of course we're going to put links in the show notes and on the blog on my site to, you know, how to get there. But how do women get involved, and what do they need to know about getting involved with the course?
Right. So the course begins, yes, August the 13th, and there's a free video series that we put out that just gives you more information about me, my style, about the course, the kind of things that we cover. There's even a quiz you can take, just how underfucked are you, and find out. So that video series is up for a couple of weeks until the end of the month, and then the registration opens on July the 30th, and then there's tons of description about the course and breakdown of all how it works, and that'll be up on our registration page at that point. But the video series is a great way to get more acquainted with me. I'll even give you some home play exercises to try. And so even if you don't end up taking the course, there's still lots of value for you in checking that out. And if you decide to go that, you know, level deeper, there's even more value and more orgasms for you waiting beyond the door.
All right, awesome. So, yeah, I want to encourage you guys to consider getting involved with the salon. And either way, whether you do or don't, check out Kim's awesome. Her writing is fabulous and fun. Her videos are amazing and also really fun. So check that stuff out, too. And, again, we'll link all that stuff here with the show. Kim, I just want to thank you again. I knew it was going to be fun to talk to you, but it's even more fun than, I don't know, even more fun than I expected. I just loved having you on the show. So thanks you so much.
It's a pleasure to be here as always, and I really enjoy talking to you too.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the show. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, and if you would, leave a rating and a review. That's really going to help us get this message out to more people, and it's going to help us know what you really like and what you don't like, and help us really tailor this show to your needs and to what you want to hear. Please stay connected with me at danielvitalis.com and sign up for my newsletter and my magazine, Rewild Yourself, and you can subscribe to both of those right there on danielvitalis.com. Got lots of really great shows lined up, and I'm going to keep bringing you more great information, and until then, keep rewilding yourself. Show you.